Life Behind the Rainbow was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland from the television licence fee. A childhood friend of mine came out as a lesbian in her late 30s. I wondered if it made me feel any different about her. It didn't. She was still the funny, clever, beautiful person I had always known. Yet she was part of a community I knew very little about. I decided to speak to her and others about living life as a member of the LGBT community in Ireland, about their life behind the rainbow. This programme is dedicated to the memory of Dennis Murphy, a true gentleman. Lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people make up approximately 10% of Ireland's population. That's almost 500,000 people. The participants in this documentary are brothers, sisters, aunts and uncles, mothers, fathers, husbands and wives. They pay their taxes, do the school runs, work in the community, live in urban and rural Ireland and contribute to our society in many different ways. This programme speaks to different members of the LGBT community about their lives and different subjects such as coming out, marriage equality, homophobia, social issues, love, family and the future. Cove woman Lynn Geary entered and won Miss Gay Cork Heats in 2013. She subsequently went on to become Miss Gay Ireland and brought the competition to Cork City. Miss Gay Ireland is a national competition celebrating LGBT women from all over Ireland. It is very different from a typical beauty pageant. Lynn speaks to us about why she entered the competition and what topic she chose to highlight.
I actually entered it the year previous to I came runner-up, I came second. I was very shy, I was, you know, on stage and stuff, and I was just watching it one year. I was like, oh, I kind of love to do that, like, you know, it looked like great fun, like, you know. But I entered it that one year and came runner up. I think Nora won it that year, Nora Dennehy. And the next year, then I was like, you know what? I had grown up, like, I had matured a bit and I was more comfortable with myself and tried again, you know. So I went the second year and ended up winning it that year. I was out now a bit longer and I was more mature, as I said, but it was just, you know, something I wanted to do. And it's weird.
How would you describe it to somebody who's never been to a Miss Gay Cork?
What I found, well, with me, it was like I was always just so down and whatever, and then as I was getting better and getting out of my depression, I felt like I can do this. It was kind of empowering, like, you know, that I could stand up on a stage and I could speak about my depression, and that was kind of my reason. And then watching the contestants this year at Miss Gay Ireland, I think a lot of it was, no, I think a lot of people do struggle, like depression is rampant in the gay scene, it's everywhere, like. And from listening to all the girls on stage, I think that's what a lot of it was, is that they had conquered something or got over something, and now they're putting themselves up there in front of everyone and, you know, out there and trying to help others and showing people, you know, if I can do this and you can too, you know, that sort of a way.
And did you use Miss Gay Ireland as a platform to highlight issues about depression?
For me, that's what I spoke about. They're like my topics, and I always put it out there, like, because before I would never have shared it or let anyone know how I was feeling or what I was going through. There was only a certain few kind of knew at that stage. Then I was at a point where, yes, I can talk about it, and no, I'm not going to be ashamed about talking about it. And do you know, if I'd helped one person, I was, you know, happy to do so. And I was on the radio as well, and I spoke a few times, and it was just great hearing people texting in and saying, you know, fair play to that girl. And there was one man who texted my dad and said, I heard your daughter on the radio and my daughter's going through the same thing, and I kind of understand it a bit better now, and tell her thank you very much for doing what she did, you know. I just think that's great. It's nice to see. And I don't find myself, if I ever see anyone I see struggling, because, you know, I think once you've been there, you know what it's like. And a lot of people know that I have been through that and would come to me, even just ask me a question and where to go, or who I spoke to and how I got through it and whatever. So,
and you say that it's rampant in the gay community. Why do you think that is?
There is a lot of it. You can see it, like, there's so many people struggling, and see people self-harming and drugs and drink, and it is everywhere. I don't know whether it's because being gay isn't okay.
In 2015 in Ireland, is it still not okay for people to be gay? Why can't people just come out?
It's not that easy. Do you know, I don't think coming out will ever be easy for anyone, whether being gay is okay or not. Even just to, you know, find the feelings yourself and admit it yourself, I think that's half the battle, like, because you're telling yourself, no, this isn't, you know, what am I feeling? This isn't happening, do you know? And I don't know whether that is because being gay isn't okay at the moment, or, you know, it's not 100% okay in people's eyes, but coming out is just, I think that's a lot of it. It's just, it's so hard. And even when you do come out then, me personally, I just went a bit mad. Don't it sort of way. I came out, I got over the battle, and I just went mad on drink and partying and drugs and the whole lot, and that doesn't help then either. So I don't know, is it a combination of the whole lot, or I don't know.
Do you think that people are more open and accepting now of the LGBT community?
I think there'll always be a way to go, to be honest. Obviously, you know, it has gotten better. You can see that, like, you can't deny the fact that it has. But I think you'll always get the haters. I think that's life. I don't think you'll ever have a world where everything's a-okay. It just doesn't work like that. I think the more confident we get as a community and the stronger we get, I think the easier then it will be to handle, you know, the haters then will become a minority. And once that happens, it'll be great.
Maria Walsh from Philadelphia became the 56th Rose of Tralee in 2014. She spoke afterwards of her confidence as a gay woman and said the question of her sexuality never arose during the festival. Miss Walsh was the overwhelming favourite to win, and her sexual orientation was not revealed until after the competition. I wanted to ask what two members of the LGBT community thought of a gay woman winning the Rose of Tralee for the first time in its history. We hear Sandra Murphy's view on the subject, but I started by asking Lynn what she thought.
I think it's fabulous. It's great. I was delighted when I heard, because you wouldn't see it. Growing up, like, we always watched Rose of Tralee, and my nan would be watching it. They go down to Kerry every summer, like, so they'd be mad into Rose of Tralee. But I was delighted. I feel personally that if they had known she was a lesbian, I don't think she'd be in the competition. That's my thoughts. I don't think she would have been. Why wait till afterwards to tell everyone you're gay? Because she probably herself thought, okay, let's not mention this. Maybe if it came, I did read one or two of her interviews, she said that she didn't avoid it, but she didn't feel the need to bring it up either.
And can I just say what I think is really, really cool is she was voted the winner, and everybody seemed to agree that she looked beautiful, came across amazing. She interviewed fabulous. People just fell in love with her. If she came onto that stage telling people she was gay, would she have gotten the same reception? I don't know.
I don't think, I know people don't mean to, but I don't think she would have been given the chance that she was given with them assuming she was straight.
I think if she had come out before she went on so publicly, the sentences, the comments and the lines would be, oh, there's the gay one, she's a lesbian, did you know? Not, oh my God, she's amazing, her cause is outstanding, she is beautiful. It would have totally sideswiped the whole meaning of the Rose of Tralee. She went up there as she was, a human being.
Without much fuss or preamble, Minister for Health Leo Varadkar took to the airwaves on the 18th of January 2015, his 36th birthday, to publicly declare he was a gay man for the first time. He didn't have to, but he did it. It shouldn't matter, but it does. He does not want his sexual orientation to define him, but in the short term at least, it did. He is the first openly gay cabinet minister in Ireland. Many ordinary people face the same dilemma, to tell or not, to come out or not, and to whom and how. Saying those three words, I am gay, does not define who you are. At least it shouldn't. It's just a part of who you are. Sandra Murphy is born and bred in Cork, She's someone I've known all my life and the most thoughtful, funny, entertaining, intelligent, beautiful person I know. Sandra explains to me what it was like for her to keep such a huge aspect of who she was to herself for many years and the damage it can do to a person. We never had the conversation, so I was curious to know, when did she realise she was gay?
Oh my gosh, the amount of times people have asked me that question, and actually I can't really pinpoint it. In my teens, I knew I was slightly different. I had boyfriends in my late teens, which I really, really loved and adored and liked hanging out with them and kissing them. But then it stopped. I was like, okay, there's something really weird with me, because I kind of, what should I say, moved to second base. Absolutely no interest, even though I really kind of, I would have found them attractive and liked hanging out with them. But there was an extra part of me then that would have been more attracted to hanging out with girls, and I was a bit more comfortable in that scene, I guess. And then kind of in my mid-20s, I fell in love, so I thought, and had a kind of a closet relationship for a long, long time. And that ended eventually, so I would have been in my mid-30s when I eventually came out. There was a long process between being in my teens and hitting my mid-30s, figuring out who I was, having a relationship that nobody knew about, which was really, really hard, and I struggled with it a lot, because when it was good, it was really good, but when it was bad, it was really, really bad, because I had nobody to talk to, nobody to vent to, nobody to explain how I felt, why I was angry. And I remember my friends and my sister, Petrina, looking at me some days going, what is wrong with you? You're like, you're so angry, and you've just had an argument with a certain person, and friends don't argue like that. And the whole time I couldn't say anything. Well, I felt I couldn't say anything at the time. And my whole insides just burned and churned. And I, for lack of a better word, I probably started rotting from the inside out, because I was losing myself. The girl I was in my late teens and 20, she kind of nearly left me when I went through all that myself and just had nobody in my eyes that I could talk to for support or help, or just say, oh my God, cop on, get over yourself.
How did you cope with that, Sandra?
I don't know. I really don't, because I remember getting so cross and so angry. I was turning into a person that I didn't recognise. I remember driving up the quays, coming up from Mum's house, Silver Springs, up there by the port, and looking at the river as I was driving, because you just drive alongside, and I was like, three times I'd say in a few years, I was like, how easy would it be to just turn left and just make the pain and the hurt go away? I think I dealt with it. I don't think I dealt with it. I think I survived it, really, is probably the only way to kind of look at it, you know? And years later, when I look back, it taught me a lot. But at the time, it was just turmoil and hurt and pain, and it was just not a good place to be.
I was sad to hear that a friend of mine contemplated suicide just for being who she was. Sadly, it is not uncommon for members of the LGBT community to struggle in this way. I asked her, how did she feel when she eventually came out?
So when I came out, it's not like you kind of go, Lynn, I'm gay, Mum, I'm gay, Headmaster, I'm gay. You just don't do it. For me, I kind of made a decision that I was going to come out, because I had been up in Dublin with a friend of mine that my parents didn't really know, because this was somebody I used to hang out with on the gay scene. But when I started making my friends inside in loafers, my mum was so, where did you go last night? And I would always kind of fluff around the answer and not give a direct answer. But I was in Dublin, and she rang me on Monday. I was sitting in the car and she was like, oh, where are you? I said, oh, I'm in Man Point. And it was the first time in my life that I'd say I ever lied to my mother. And I was like, I got off the phone. I was like, actually, I can't do this. I need to tell her. I told my sister, I said, Katrina, I said, I need to tell Mum and Dad about my gayness. Because I had to lie to Mum yesterday, and I just felt really, really crap after it. So I went down anyway, and Mum was inside getting the dinner ready. Mum was peeling, and I said, Mum, I said, I need to tell you something. So what's wrong? And I couldn't talk, and the tears just started falling off my face. And she stopped and she turned and she looked at me. She says, are you all right? I said, Mum, do you know the way you like boys? And she said, yeah. I said, that's the way I feel about girls. And she looked at me and she says, okay. She said, have you been to a doctor? I said, Mum,
I'm not sick, I'm gay, right? And she just gave me a big hug and a big kiss, and she was bawling and I was bawling, and it was very funny afterwards, like the way she was like, and we still slag her big time over asking me had I been to a doctor. But you know what, by her saying that, at least I was able to boom, get those three words out of my mouth, and they just flew out. She said, are you going to tell your dad? I said, I am, but I said, I'm exhausted. She said, do you want me to tell him? I said, please do.
Just like every other family, the Murphys sat down for dinner, and afterwards, while cleaning up, Sandra's mum spoke to her father.
My father walked past me, he put on the kettle, came back over to me and put his arms around me, and he's like, Sandra, I love you no matter what you are. And sure, I was bawling again. And that's kind of the way I came out. And then once that was done, my friends and my family were my priority. I don't care what anybody else thinks. They're absolutely no bearing on my life whatsoever. If they don't like me, that's okay. And I kind of had the same attitude with telling my parents. I love and adore my mum and dad. They're the best thing that I've ever had in my life. They've moulded me into the person who I am. But I had struggled so long to come out and finally tell them. I was like, if they don't like it, I physically didn't have the energy to take on what they thought or what they felt. And if they didn't like it, I was like, my mind was made up. That was their battle. It was their choice.
Sandra had a positive, although emotional, experience of coming out. Her family and friends' only concern was why it took her so long to confide in them.
It took me long enough to find out who I was myself. I mean, it's one thing figuring, okay, I'm a bit strange. Then it's getting into a relationship and kissing girls. But all the time, you're still trying to figure out what is going on with me. My head, my body, my emotions. It's up there. It's like juggling 10 balls blindfolded. But what I found strange was, when I eventually did come out to my friends and my family, I was out and I started going to loafers. I went through the whole, who am I? Then I told people who I was. Now what do I do? And I came out and it was like, what do I do? Is there a little fax that I should have got? Is there a little, you know, kind of place that I need to go to and find the rules and regulations of being gay? And it was very weird. And I think we forget that. There's the before, what do I do? There's when you do, okay, I'm out. And it's like a sigh of relief. It is a massive sigh of relief. And then it's like, okay, what's next on the agenda?
And so, what is next for someone who has just come out? Where can they go to meet people who feel the same way that they do? Sandra mentioned Loafers Bar as a place for her to socialise. Loafers is Ireland's oldest gay bar, operating as a gay venue for 31 years. It is famous, first and foremost, for its friendly atmosphere and helpful staff. I sat in the bar with Ted O'Connell, the current proprietor, and he tells me a little bit about the history of the bar.
1983, Derek Geraghty opened the bar. At the time, he was in a relationship with his own partner. Apparently, he himself never actually intended it to become a gay bar, but because of all his friends and the circle that he moved in, it very, very quickly became identified as a gay bar, which was quite groundbreaking, really, because this was 1983. It would be another 10 years before homosexuality among gay men would be decriminalised. So it's fair to say that over in the first probably 20 years of the pub's existence, people would be sort of fairly furtively loitering around outside and then running the door when they felt nobody was looking. And that's in a very sharp contrast to today, where, you know, even though we have a fine smoking area out the back, lots of customers choose to stand out publicly on the pavement in the front of the bar and have a cigarette, and there really is no issue at all at this stage. From that point of view, things have changed in a very, very positive way. I like to describe Loafers, and this has always been the case really, it is a local where the clientele comes from all over the city and county. So everybody knows each other, well, most people know each other's names. It's a place where people feel at ease, where they're comfortable, I hope, and they feel welcome. Gay people are quite comfortable now socialising in right across the city in all sorts of different chic bars and trendy bars and popular bars. But I still think that there is a role for a bar like Loafers to play, because it is the one place where people come and they feel as though they belong here. So it is an institution, there's no doubt about that.
Is the gay scene still as strong in Cork as it was before? I suggested to Ted that gay people can socialise outside of the gay scene. So is there a need for a bar like Loafers?
I would agree with it to a large extent. Having said that, if somebody is new to Cork and they want to, if you like, meet, come in and be comfortable and meet people who are of like mind, then they're more likely to do so in Loafers or indeed in Chambers. It's fair to say that in the past, the scene was almost ghettoised and a little bit underground. And I certainly know that there will be some of the older members of the community that actually miss that, because it was, you know, a bit of fun and it was a bit dangerous and it was, you know, poking two fingers to the establishment. Whereas now most people just don't raise an eyebrow over it. So, you know.
Loafers Bar can be found on Douglas Street in Cork City. I asked Ted, was there ever any resistance with the location of the bar?
Certainly not on the street. Absolutely not. We have excellent relationships with the neighbourhood, neighbouring bars, cafes, shops, etc. I suppose Douglas Street has always tended to be a little bit bohemian, and from that point of view, Loafers fits in very, very well.
Homophobia is defined as hatred or fear of homosexuals. I wondered, had Ted, as the proprietor of Loafers, ever experienced this?
Since coming out, I can honestly say that, you know, the amount of, if you like, homophobic or anti-gay behaviour that I have encountered, it has been relatively little, I must say. Considering the fact that Loafers is a well-known, well-established gay venue, you could think that it would be the target of some hostility. And I certainly know that in the past, that there was a certain amount of that. But fortunately, I think we're living in more enlightened times now. And other than a few teenagers passing by and pushing a lad through the door to, you know, embarrass him, there really is very, very little. Very, very little.
Transvestites, sometimes called cross-dressers, are people who wear clothing, accessories, jewellery and makeup not traditionally associated with their assigned sex. Transvestites dress for numerous reasons. Some feel the strong need to express their feminine or masculine side, while others might cross-dress for artistic expression or erotic enjoyment. Jason Power is from Limerick, but now calls Cork his spiritual home. He is a gay man and his alter ego is called Miss Bliss. He has no desire to become a woman and speaks to me about how it came to be and how she has evolved over time.
I think it is a side of me that wasn't confident as Jason to come out, because I've always wanted to be on stage and I've always wanted to perform, but there's always been that voice inside that's like, you know, that's kind of like restricted me. And I've always said that I always feel more confident when you're someone else, when you're portraying someone else, the confidence just comes out naturally in you. When you're performing as someone else, it's like you just don't think about it, you just go for it. I think the character kind of helps me confidence wise, because I've done things that I would never, ever, like, kind of have the guts to do on stage or in real life, or, you know what I mean? It's given me opportunities to travel, and I'm a homebird, so, like, I would never have done any of this before. It's brought me out of my shell, and the character has made me more comfortable within myself. I think if this has taught me anything, it's that nothing is impossible or nothing is out of reach. I never thought that I would go on stage or I would sing in front of a crowd. I've done all that, and for me, it's about being confident and just having the experience and just having fun. And it sounds cliche, but it's kind of like, I think the character has kind of like given me a chance to kind of have my dream, because my dream has always been to be on stage and to perform. I think without the character, I don't think I'd be doing that.
Colin Byrne studied radio in the Liberties in Dublin, and it was there that he created his alter ego, Joanna Ride. Joanna Ride first came to prominence in 2006 with her all-singing, all-dancing cabaret act grabbed attention around Ireland. She appeared on the Podge and Rod show, and in 2008 she was approached to appear on the All-Ireland Talent Show, where she narrowly missed out on the live shows. Following this appearance as Joanna, Colin decided to concentrate on the character full-time and moved to Waterford, where he joined Beat 102-103. Joanna is the only drag act on mainstream radio in Ireland.
I was studying radio and I created the character when we were hosting the radio show, and I just wasn't comfortable with hearing my own voice. I never had a lot of confidence in myself ever. The character came about because of that. It was just a way of kind of channeling something that I had inside me that I was always kind of nervous about letting out. But Joanna is kind of like a mask. It means I can hide behind her. And I am so much more extroverted in character than I am as myself.
I suppose she allows you to be that person and then you can step away from her as well.
I kind of go inside her head, if that makes sense. I kind of, you know, think of what would Joanna do, and it's always a lot crazier than what I would do. I'm a lot quieter than the character is. I think as well, because of the experiences I've had over the years portraying Joanna, that I've actually gained a lot of confidence in myself. That's what kind of has caused me to change and do things as myself now, because I was always afraid of doing that, but now I'm okay with it.
Transgender means someone whose gender differs from the one they were given when they were born. Transgender people may identify as male or female, or they may feel that neither label fits them. Transgender Equality Network Ireland seeks to improve conditions and advance the rights of trans people and their families. Despite significant progress in the past years, Ireland remains a place where it is difficult for trans people to lead safe, healthy and integrated lives. TENI is dedicated to ending transphobia, including stigma, discrimination and inequality. This programme is predominantly about people. Each person has their own story to tell, as Ted points out.
For people who have an issue with gay people, and for people who have an issue with you know, our perceived lifestyle, don't presume too much. We're very, very normal human beings for the most part. One of the popular misconceptions I had before coming out was, you know, oh my God, the gays live a very promiscuous life and they're involved in orgies and all sorts of things. Trust me, nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, I was downright disappointed when I came out first. I said, this is not what I was expecting at all. We work our jobs, we earn our salaries, our wages, we pay our taxes, we shop in the supermarket. We just happen to be interested in people of a similar sex. And it is really nothing more threatening or problematic than that.
But the last word is for Sandra.
I was working part-time in a bar just down on the corner from here. Guy used to come into the bar, got friendly with them, chatting. He ended up being gay. So kind of when I found out that he was gay, I kind of was like, okay. So we used to be chatting away and he's like, Sandra, I'm going up to town. He said, do you want to come with? So got a cab, went off into town. And that was kind of the first of me initially starting to come out and being adventurous with who I am and in the right scene and the setting. And what was really weird was people that I had known from years ago, I was like, oh my God, are they gay? Do they think I'm gay? Do they know I'm gay? Because yeah, actually I am. And did they think so back in the day? And you're like, boom, 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 there's 140 questions going on. So I just went out, I met people, I spoke, I laughed, I joked, I cried. And my life just kind of unfolded the way I think it should have been. Life is hard, let alone adding this big event into the middle of it as well. You know, I'm a lot more in control of who I am, my emotions, my people. The people I surround myself with are the key to me. They're my platform, my foundation, and I wouldn't be where I am today without them. And that's my friends, my school friends, workmates from different jobs. I won the lotto when it came to that. And I don't know what I'd be here today if I didn't have them people around me. Do you know? People say to me, gosh, I met somebody inside work the other day. They're gay. You must know them. Really, I probably didn't get the memo on that one yet now. And, you know, my membership hasn't been updated. What's the name?
Join me in episode 2 of Life Behind the Rainbow, where we look at Cork Pride, facilities for LGBT people, and much, much more. Life Behind the Rainbow was produced and presented by Orla Reardon and edited by Sean Healy. This programme is a Community Radio Youghal production. If you have been affected by any of the issues in this programme, you can call the National LGBT Helpline on 1890 929 539.